Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is economist Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, who is currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She's the author of the book, Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephanie Griffiths-Jones.
It's a pleasure to be here. Such a good program.
Well, thank you so much, Stephanie. And today's New York Times is quite an alarming piece by Nobel laureate Paul Krugman, Europe's Economic Suicide, where he says European leaders, there's an apparent determination of European leaders to commit economic suicide for the continent as a whole. And at the end of his article, he says that they seem determined to drive their economy and their society off a cliff, and the whole world will pay the price. Do you share his alarm, Stephanie?
Well, yes, I think that this diagnosis is correct, and so are his proposals, because I think this idea that you can impose major fiscal austerity on countries is completely crazy. It's bad arithmetic, it ignores the lessons of history, and it's bad economics. It's bad arithmetic because if you lower debt to reduce fiscal spending at a time when the private sector is too scared to increase its own spending, you will lower growth and you will lower GDP, and your ratio of debt to GDP will actually go up as you start trying to reduce it. Secondly, it's bad. It ignores the lessons of history because this is what was done in the 1930s. This is what we have been trying to avoid, and they're falling into the same trap. And it's bad economics because Keynes thought of this, as Joe Stiglitz has said it, and now Krugman is very clearly saying that you cannot lower aggregate demand further as a way of solving a debt crisis. What Europe needs and the world needs, more growth. And if you impose fiscal austerity, you will not have growth.
Well, at this point, Spain seems to be teetering, and the statistics on Spain are, first of all, the cost of their borrowing has reached over 6%, which is unsustainable. My understanding is that German bonds are, about 1.78 or something by comparison. Spain has 23.6% unemployment, which is comparable to what happened here in the Great Depression. Youth unemployment is over 50%. But my understanding is that most of it comes from the bursting of the housing bubble, which was generated by German capital from German banks, largely for German people buying second homes in Spain. And it seems that the Spaniards are paying the price. Can you walk us through this?
Well, I don't think we can just blame the German banks, although they were certainly responsible. But I think the Spanish authorities did not control the housing bubble. It's an interesting question why they had some counter-cyclical regulations, which is good, on the banks, but they did not control lending in real estate. And in so many cases, this has ended in tears. What is interesting to point out is that Spain actually had a fiscal surplus in 2007, and it is only as a result of the crisis in Europe and its effort to have Keynes policies that its debt and its deficit has grown so much. I think, as you mentioned Germany, I think it's very important to say that you can deal with these problems in two ways, as Keynes taught us. You can either deflate the better economies, or you could expand growth in the countries that have more surpluses, that have more policy space. And this is exactly the case, because Germany could increase real wages, could increase fiscal spending, and could therefore lead to higher growth in Europe, which would help countries like Spain to export more and therefore have lower unemployment. And secondly, European leaders should be much more imaginative. They have, for example, a big European public bank, European Investment Bank, and they could expand it, say double the capital, double its lending to SMEs, for infrastructure in countries like Spain, in countries like Greece, and this could create more aggregate demand, and they could do that without major increases in fiscal deficit. So it's just applying the right economics, which is increasingly difficult, but there is still policy space, and they should just do it.
Well, aren't they, the European Central Bank, obsessed by inflation? And I think you're arguing that they need a little bit of inflation.
Well, inflation would be good, but above all, I mean, I think the European Central Bank has moved forward. It has been providing a lot of liquidity, which has been helpful for avoiding problems in the private banks. But beyond that, you then have to have some kind of fiscal response. And, of course, these countries like Spain in the periphery cannot do that alone. Some of that heavy lifting has to be done by the German economy and to a certain extent also by the British economy, which also has some fiscal space. And it's not just me or more progressive academics saying that. I just heard a speech by the head of Western Hemisphere of the IMF arguing for more fiscal expansion in Europe. So there's quite a lot of consensus among good economists. It's just that the politicians in Europe are captured in what Stiglitz calls this collective suicide pact, which is to cut, which further undermines growth, which then scares the financial market. Because financial markets are not just scared of the debt. They're also scared of the lack of growth, of the high unemployment, as you say, of potential political tensions that may arise. If you gave some hope to the countries, to the young people, for jobs, and the banks could respond more positively.
Again, I'm speaking with Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, the economist who's currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She's the author of the book Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. We're talking yet again, I have to say, Stephanie, I feel like I've had this conversation a number of times over the last couple of years about Europe's inability to get its hands around its debt, a situation to build the sufficient firewalls to deal with the north-south divide, which is pretty clear and growing. And here we are back again having the same conversation. And of course, the subtext for this conversation is if there is a crisis in the Eurozone, it's bound to affect the U.S. economy and impact the very, very fragile recovery that we're going through. And, of course, that will have enormous political repercussions for Barack Obama's re-election.
I think you're quite right. I mean, the U.S. economy is beginning to recover, even though in a fragile way. Unemployment is going down, which is very positive. And the last thing that the U.S. economy needs and the Obama campaign is a big storm coming from Europe. So the U.S. administration has to put pressure, particularly on the Germans, but also on the British, for a more expansionary fiscal policy accompanying a more relaxed monetary policy. And it's not just for the U.S., it's also for the rest of the world, because what will happen to developing countries if there's a full-blown European crisis? If Spain is unable to refinance its debt through the banks, what will happen to the European banking system, which is interconnected with the banks of the rest of the world? What will happen if European aggregate demand collapses? And so we need a bigger firewall, as you say, but above all, we need more expansionary fiscal policies and higher increases in real wages in Germany. I mean, Germany is very keen on its competitiveness with China, which is important, but it also sells a lot to Europe and trades a lot with Europe. So if real wages in Germany were to increase, then real wages in Spain wouldn't have to fall. And it becomes a positive sum game rather than a negative sum game as it's being played now. And you know, surely we need to learn the lessons from the Great Recession, from the great Latin American debt crisis of the 80s. We do not want to have a lost decade for growth in Europe. We do not want to have the risk of political tensions increasing as they did in the 1930s. Surely, you know, as Toynbee said, those who do not learn from history are destined to repeat it. But we do not want to repeat the horrors of the 1930s and the 1940s. And therefore, we need to have good economists doing reasonable things before it's too late.
So what explains this constant inability of the Eurozone, particularly the bigger players, Germany and France, to get their hands around this ongoing crisis. They delay and they dither and they eventually deal with things too late, and it becomes much more expensive, which is the case with the Greek situation, and now similar situation with Spain. And you've just made a very eloquent case, and I'm sure other economists in Europe have made this case, and I'm sure that Geithner with the U.S. Treasury has made this case. What explains the resistance? Why is it that we have this cycle, this pattern of inability to get their hands around this crisis, this ongoing, it's about the third year we're talking about now. That's the part of it that I find mystifying, the gulf between economic realities and political possibilities.
I think you're quite right. I mean, it is very difficult to defend the policymakers. It is very difficult. It's not a single country like the United States with different political interests. And it's a situation where financial market and regulated financial market and set of finance, as we could call it, have become extremely powerful and are dictating the terms of the government. But I think also there is a lack of vision of the governments and a sort of narrow political way of dealing with things. Germans have always been very scared of inflation, and of course inflation is not really a major risk at the moment. The risk is deflation. And therefore it is this lack of vision of conservative governments that are scared. They're like a rabbit caught by headlights of an incoming car or a rapidly approaching car. And there is this lack of economic flexibility that, this fiscal pact, which talks about more and more the same, which is actually paralyzing the European government. But it is very difficult because they have allowed these financial markets to become so powerful, to have the power to dictate, what should these governments do. It's very interesting that actually François Hollande, the social democratic candidate, the socialist candidate, is talking about renegotiating the fiscal pact. It would naturally be delicate to do so precisely because of the pressure of the market. But it would mean a first time that a political leader of an important European country would be pointing to the need for growth. He wants more expansionary policies, particularly in Germany. He wants, indeed, like we were talking, a far bigger role for the European Investment Bank. It's in his program. And if he was there, he might, if he does well in the election this Sunday and afterwards, he might change the tone of the debate.
Again, I speak with economist Stephanie Griffith-Jones, who's currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. So you mentioned the French socialist candidate for president and the possibility that he may get elected on Sunday. Is it this coming Sunday that the elections take place?
The first round is coming Sunday.
Yeah. So my understanding is that Sarkozy's economic policies have been absolutely disastrous, that he's in total denial and has been about what needs to be done, and he's been in this way for some time. What explains that?
Well, of course, Sarkozy is in a relatively weak position. He has his partnership with Merkel, and clearly Germany is the stronger partner. France has already seen its debt downgraded, and Sarkozy is not a man of vision. So he has been playing this kind of narrow crisis management game. All these summits and so on, but they do not resolve anything. I think what they need to do, as I said before, and as Krugman very clearly says it today in the paper, is to move towards a policy of far greater growth, of resolving the imbalances within Europe by expanding the growth of Germany. And this is, of course, not up to France only. It's mainly up to Germany, because France, I think, doesn't have the same policy space as Germany. Maybe it could expand a little bit, but they are also concerned about the loss of their credit rating. So it's basically Germany who can say we will save Europe, not only by putting money into this, but we will save Europe by by expanding our fiscal policy, and we have to tell the markets that this is the best way forward. And if Merkel had this kind of vision, then she would, instead of worrying about every single region election, which she has been actually losing, this would be good for actually for the German economy. The problem is that the Germans don't feel the need to do this because actually the German economy is doing relatively well, unemployment is relatively low, but they need to do this for the rest of Europe because if not, their banks will suffer. And a European crisis is also bad for Germany and bad for German banks.
So it's been said that what Germany was unable to do militarily in the late 30s and 40s in Europe, they've succeeded to do economically in terms of dominating Europe. But if that analogy is true, why then would they literally throw away the fruits of victory? If they don't apparently recognize that even though they're doing well, their fate is tied to the rest of Europe?
I think that's right. I mean, I think these parallels with the Second World War are a little bit overdone, even though my family suffered a lot in the Second World War. But I think it's just basically lack of vision and bad economics, because they have this kind of, you know, like narrow housekeeping rule, like Margaret Thatcher had and Mrs. Merkel also, that you have to save more and balance your budget and so on. Mm-hmm. And they have done certain things which work for them, but they don't realize that it doesn't work collectively in a situation of crisis, and that they have to have, better economic analysis. They have to come back. So in Germany now, the Social Democrats, who may actually be going into government because Merkel's allies have been doing quite badly in recent elections, so there may be a great coalition now with the right, with the Christian Democrats and the Social Democrats. And I think the Social Democrats have learned, and they are now propounding more Keynesian policies. So if you had a situation where Hollande won and where the Social Democrats went in Germany, you might have a change of balance in terms of economic policies, which could, I think, save the situation, one would hope.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Stephanie Griffiths-Jones.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephanie Griffiths-Jones, the economist who is currently the Financial Markets Program Director at the Initiative for Policy Dialogue at Columbia University. She's the author of the book, Time for a Visible Hand, Lessons from the 2008 World Financial Crisis. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about Mitt Romney's Mormon Church and their egalitarian socialist roots.